Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI.org. It's a podcast now. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available as a podcast, and it's available on iTunes. And joining me in studio, a guy who has been with a part of this show in one way, shape, or form since the very, very beginning, and it's been too long since we've had you in studio. The man who gives us a little of this and a little of that at the Film Yap, longtime critic Joe Shearer.
Hello.
It's dumb.
There we go.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
All right. Not too bad.
So, yes, which means I'm pulling off all this Joe soundbite.
It's dumb.
There we go. And one of the films we will be talking about.
It's also an art film.
There you go. So
it is. It really is.
So just a little background before we get into it. I just got done doing a show, and so I've been kind of getting back into the swing of things, of going to screeners. And it's as this is our favorite time of the year because it's grown-up movie season. Mm-hmm. The award consideration screeners are arriving in the mail. Mm-hmm. So this is a time where this is truly work, ladies and gentlemen, that we will be watching serious movies with serious performances, and then we will sit down and we will have the hallowed IFJA awards meeting, which will be cutthroat. It'll be like Knives Out, basically.
Right.
It meets Midway.
Yes.
And theories and counter theories will be said and made fun of, and then we give you guys awards on Sunday night. Yeah. So that's basically not this Sunday, but just in general.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That being said, so I should say we started the weekend last week with a screening of the Scorsese film The Irishman, which we're going to talk about later in the month. And there are sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, screenings that happen Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Yes, you know those.
Uh-huh.
And since I have not attended one of these in a while, I decided to atone for my lack of presence at film screenings for the last few months, and I joined Joe and his wonderful brood of kids. And we saw Playing with Fire.
Yes,
we did. Joe, you brought the kids to that one.
I did.
Go ahead. This is not is this the first time John Cena's done a quote unquote kids film? This is not his first time with a film, but
yeah.
Also the wrestling correspondent. So.
Yes, and I think it is the first full fledged kids movie. He's maybe had spots here or there. Maybe
like Daddy's Home, he had a cameo in that.
Yeah, but he's kind of oddly done a lot of, of course, the action films, but then a couple of R-rated comedies and things. So
right,
it is kind of funny. It seems like this would have been his thing already. He should have been doing this for a while, but I don't know. Maybe we see why he's not doing it.
Okay, there's he plays in this one. He plays a fire jumper, as they are called. They live up in the California, Northern California woods, and he is one of these precision guys, and everything is serious and to the letter, and everything has to be done a certain way. And of course, plans are thwarted when children are involved.
Also he doesn't use contractions, and he speaks like as if he's in the military, so. It's I've been trying to kind of explain this to some people who hadn't heard of it, and
it's his Kindergarten Cop, basically.
It is, and it is one of those movies, but he's someone. His character is basically like a grown up. It's like the vision of a grown up through the eyes of a kid who someone who's really serious about their job, and so everything that he says has to relate to his job, and that's
and
the
plot
thing,
points,
right? And that's the only thing in his life, right? Is who his character is what he does. So, it's simplistic, obviously. The thing that really kind of struck me about this movie was the cast.
Well, I want to get to that because it's funny that you mention an adult through the eyes of a kid. Because as I was driving here, actually, I work on Saturdays. As I was driving, I had this theory because we occasionally come up with cockamamie theories here at the IFJA and other critics, I think, but. Yeah. Our buddies at the Midwest Film Journal, I believe, did a list of the Dollar Cinema of War films.
Yes.
Because Midway opened this week. Uh-huh. But I was watching Playing with Fire. So the whole premise is three kids are rescued from a burning cabin, and because it's the weekend and social services and parents or what have you, they're forced to stay in the cabin in the fire. It's not a firehouse. It's right. A fire cabin, basically,
right.
with other grown-ups. Yeah. So, and that's where things really get wacky.
It's a cool grown-up playhouse.
It kind of is.
For firefighters is kind of like with the way it comes across.
Yeah.
No pole.
No, there is no pole there. So, we're not doing those jokes. Although there are other jokes. We'll get to that. But I kept watching this and I kept thinking, this is a kid's film. It's not even a John Cena film. John Cena is in it.
Yeah.
And the for me, the giveaway was... The Nickelodeon.
Yeah. Look,
it's Nickelodeon and Paramount and mm-hmm. a few other production companies. And then there's a couple moments that happened where I thought, oh, no, this is truly a kid's film with John Cena in it.
Yeah.
One is when the John Cena character, there's a burning cabin, the kids are stuck in the cabin, and that's a fairly intense-looking scene. And then he, comes down a rope. He landed better than Owen Hart. And
too soon.
but as that moment, as he's trying to rescue them, and he has his wacky sidekicks, who we'll get to in a second, are going to pull him up. In the middle of a seriously intense burning cabin scene, there's some slapstick.
Yeah,
where the Cena character is pulled up and slams onto the ceiling a couple of times. So you're. It's really geared toward children in that aspect. Mm-hmm. There was a moment you and I both laughed at as parents and film nerds when so you have a teenage girl, the leader of the group. You have the tween boy, 10-year-old, maybe 8-year-old boy who cannot keep his hands off of anything and mischief happens. Mm-hmm. And you have the little two-year-old, I believe, who loves the pet dog. There's always a very intense looking fire dog and is falls under the spell of this little girl. Mm-hmm. But there's a scene about halfway through the film maybe where the oldest one steals a vehicle and drives off while everyone's asleep, and John Cena catches up with them, and then as soon as he catches up with them, they decide to camp for the night because right, the timeline, they made this for kids, so kids aren't thinking about the timeline and continuity of a film. But, the chase had to have lasted, I don't know, a minute at 9 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning, and then all of a sudden, we have to build a fire.
Yeah.
And then they have this really elongated nighttime sequence where John Cena's character and the kids start to bond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. And the other part that I said is geared toward kids, and part of it's in the trailer, there's a moment with exploding diarrhea that's more disturbing than Midsummer.
Yes. And that you're talking about the one in that scene, right?
Right, because there's ladies and gentlemen, as a filmmaker, you try to, do what you can, put your own spin on the exploding diarrhea sequence, and I believe they did this one with a firefighter's mask. That's
right,
that's really about it. That's all I can say.
Oh, the one I was talking about was, I guess it wasn't exploding diarrhea per se, but it was a similar bodily function that that one of our characters was
boom,
experiencing.
Boom.
So it led led to this really uncomfortable scene where
with the two guys.
Well, John Cena and the baby.
Go ahead. Word this carefully.
So Cena's character has to excuse himself to go take care of his own business, and the baby insists on going with him. and there's it leads to a very uncomfortable sequence to me.
It's uncomfortable when you're a parent and it's your own kid.
Yes, yes, and it almost veered into kind of odd, creepy territory. I'm kind of surprised that scene even kind of got in
there.
You know? And I get obviously Nickelodeon poop jokes are Nickelodeon's wheelhouse, of course, but it was still to me, I was like, it's kind of a grown man holding a baby while he's, you know,
doing his business.
Yeah, and it was just kind of uncomfortable to me. But thankfully, it was very quick. That wasn't obviously the spirit of the scene was meant to be comedic, but
yeah,
I was like, eh. But yeah, there are a couple of other poop jokes and. The one you're talking about with the mat, actually, I kind of liked the direction it went in. It was
literally
right. Yeah, it was kind of a different. It was a slightly different, right? Like this is a big strong man has baby. You know,
and it's not a what was the line used in Guardian of the Galaxy? It was not a a Pollock painting. It's not that.
Yeah.
Those are the things where I say this is not for grown-ups. Parents, you are being dragged to this.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the other thing that's fascinating about this film, watching it, so I, of course, went to work and went, what else has this guy worked on? Well, the director, that would be Andy Fickman, has directed other films such as She's the Man.
Oh, okay.
The Game Plan, which we were going to talk about a little bit, Dwayne Johnson's foray into Kindergarten Cop material, the Dwayne Johnson Race to Witch Mountain, You Again, the Jamie Lee Curtis film, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, and Parental Guidance. You see where we're saying here? Kevin James concert film, Parental Guidance. Yeah, so that's what this guy has worked on.
Yeah.
The film also has a way overqualified supporting cast.
Right?
I mean, it's, you know, John Cena, he's still developing as an actor, I will say. He's, you know, when certain wrestlers most wrestlers, when they get into the business of making movies, there's some personality, there's some gravitas, there's some persona that they're able to utilize. I think Dwayne Johnson is the best example of taking his ring persona, morphing it into his film persona, into a film career, and then going a step further and getting beyond it.
Yeah.
And the only time he goes in the ring is when Vince writes him a ridiculously large check.
Yes.
Good for him.
And or he has a film to promote.
That's true. So, John Cena's still getting there.
Mm-hmm.
He's still getting there. This is one of his first things of carrying a comedy, you know, on some of his shoulders. Although it should be said, two of your sidekicks are Keegan-Michael Key and John Leguizamo, and if they're not in this film, this is 70 minutes long.
Yeah.
They do a lot of the weight. They lift a lot of heavy lifting as the comedic sidekicks who are okay to show emotion and tissues. And there's some sequences. Of course, there's a gag reflex moment with the diarrhea scene. I'm like, it felt like, I'm sure when it comes out on DVD, there's going to be like 20 minutes of outtakes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. And it was, I mean, to be honest, they, in some sense, you kind of, I don't know if I feel sorry for them. I'm sure they got a healthy check, and or they did this specifically for a child, or you know, either their own child or a niece and nephew or something.
Right. I saw. Yeah, Judy Greer is in this as well.
Yeah.
And it's. Oh, however, I will say one thing I did like. It was nice to see Dennis Haysbert do comedy.
Yeah.
And I think it was what for his grandkids to watch.
Yes.
Cena's character wants to get a promotion and. Dennis Haysbert is the commander, and there's one funny scene where he's on the phone with Cena's character doing all of the ridiculous workout we've seen with the giant, you know,
the ropes
and then there's one where he's talking on the phone while his torso is getting punched repeatedly.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has just a couple of, you can see like he had a day or two, right, to
oh,
film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he comes in and just, it's fun, I guess, when he's there, comparatively fun when he's there, but yeah, he gets just a couple of scenes, and you know, he's otherwise kind of a background specter, so to speak. But it is something else. I don't Keegan-Michael Key, you know, has been terrific in things. Of course, you know, Key and Peele was kind of his highlight, but John Leguizamo has done so much. And Judy Greer, I just blew my mind. that she would agree to be in this film, given who her character is, and she literally is
the lone adult female.
Yeah, and she gets those couple of moments of, well, why are you asking me to do this? Because I'm the woman. But then she proceeds to act as stereotypically
girly
movie female as she possibly can. And she's at some one point she like is bursting into tears, you know, for something small. And I'm just like, this is, I don't know where the choice came from.
Yeah, it's the mindset of a child. So
yes,
you're happy one scene and then you're bursting in the tears the next.
I was kind of honestly, she's you know, obviously the love interest for the Cena character, and I was honestly kind of. You know, as someone who would call himself a fan of John Cena, obviously in his wrestling work.
Sure.
And, you know, he's done a couple of good movie stuff. But I was kind of like, this is not who I want his love interest to be. she's so much better than this.
Yeah. Again, like we were saying, overqualified cast on this.
Yes.
So, yeah, she had the brunt of her work. The majority of her work was bouncing off of John Cena verbally. Yes. So.
She was practically like napping while she was doing
kinda,
it.
Oh, and I should mention Tyler Mane is in this as well for you wrestling fans out there, who's got who made the most out of very little. He is his character's name is Axe, and he carries an axe and he grunts until about 2/3 of the way through the film.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, he does his work well with very, very little, I guess. So. And then it gets into, you were mentioning earlier how it's like a playhouse cabin more than a fire station or a fire jumper station. And yeah, there's, once we get into the shopping and the parachute, I kind of leaned over and I said, this is longer than The Irishman.
Right.
can we just get to what needs to be done? Now, there is a little bit of peril, but not as bad. I thought there would be a second fire, spoiler alert. There is not. So it kind of wraps up pretty fast. And by the way, so in the span of one weekend, an incredible bond. I mean, more than the Before Sunrise trilogy is, you know, where just four people, five if you count Judy Greer. You should. But the fact that they, you know, a family situation is happening so fast.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So I think you're with me.
It was an objectively bad film. But
now you're not going to make the ad campaign,
right? There. It's not to say that there aren't moments that are kind of fun,
as we mentioned. Yeah. There's some. If you're going to get dragged to this, you won't get completely bored.
There's a soap sud scene that was. It could have been more fun, but it was okay. Like you said, anytime Dennis Haysbert is in there, it's all right. John Leguizamo is one of those guys that has a sort of a Robin Williams thing, where he can be extraordinarily obnoxious, and he almost gets there, but he's, you know, he kind of stops short of, you know,
irritating Robert Williams level.
Yes, yes.
Not to be confused with good Robin Williams level.
Oh no, yeah, just, yeah. I mean, he can be good Robin Williams level too at times, but he was hamming a little bit, but and same with Keegan-Michael Key, hammed up a little bit, but that's kind of his shtick, and it's more believable for him, I guess, in this role. So
I guess now I have to, because you had your kids with you. Did they like it?
They did. They enjoyed it quite
okay.
a bit.
I wondered, because how old are the kids now?
So they're now 14, 12, and 10.
See, I wondered if they had outgrown such a thing, but apparently
they're maybe on the edge of it, but they all three enjoyed it.
Okay.
And even gave me some grief for bad-mouthing it at all to them.
Yes, critics who are also dads, that's also a problem we have to deal with.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay, folks, so parents, you've been warned. It's out there. You might get dragged to it, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Good luck.
Good luck. With that in mind, we were talking earlier of because I think it really did begin with Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger back in, I think it was late 80s, early 90s, something like that. Where
it may have been like 90.
Okay. So and since then, it has been fairly common to have cinematic tough guys in kid-oriented films. Kindergarten Cop, we talked about. I don't know why I know this, and I've never seen it, and it's really okay, but they made a direct-to-DVD sequel to Kindergarten Cop with Dolph Lundgren.
Yes, I do remember that.
Did you have to see that?
I have not seen it, but I am aware of it.
Other titles include Burt Reynolds in Cop and a Half.
That was
directed by Henry Winkler. I was in college, I think, when that came out.
Yep.
Chuck Norris, I believe, did Sidekicks and did a film with a dog.
Yeah,
so Top Dog there. And then there's Hulk Hogan. I know you told me a Hulk Hogan movie story with your kids. Would you share that with our lovely audience, please?
you might need to tell me which one.
You tried to show your kid. You've been trying to show your kids.
Oh, No Holds Barred.
Yes,
yes, I have.
Why would you do that?
Yeah. Well, so my daughter is and it's almost ironic at this point. And I guess it's a reflection if you're a wrestling fan at all in the state of the wrestling industry today.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter of my three kids is easily the most passionate wrestling fan. She convinced me to take her to the most recent event that was here.
How was that?
It was terrific. And then we're going to another one coming up in a couple of weeks. And she is very much into the women wrestlers. And, so I wanted to show her that movie just to show her how far we've come.
So, no, wait, not I Want to Hurt People, not the film with Vern Gagne that I think was also called The Wrestler.
Uh-huh.
No, you were going to start with No Holds Barred for wrestling cinema.
Yes.
I think you should show them The Wrestler.
Right.
I know you say they're not quite old enough.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to start with wrestling and cinema, start with Darren Aronofsky. Well, I know Jim Cornette's going to hate me now for saying that.
But I didn't go to Ready to Rumble.
Which, thank God.
Yeah, because I love my kids, you know. So I ended up watching it myself because they were like, no, Dad.
Okay, when was the last time you watched No Holds Barred?
You mentioned our friends at Midwest Film Journal. I actually earmarked it as one of our FYFF entries.
You did not.
Yes, and I wasn't able to stay and watch it when we scheduled it. So they watched it and they loved it. Loved it in the way that we love those kind of films.
Right. By the way, The Room is happening this weekend at midnight at Keystone Arts. Speaking of sadism.
Yeah, it's playing right over here on the TV as we watch. So.
Yes.
Long-time listeners might catch that joke. I don't know. So it's probably, like I said, I didn't actually get to see it. I was very disappointed. But it's probably been at least a good 10 to 15 years.
Oh, good Lord.
And that may have even been like a Saturday afternoon kind of like I caught a few minutes of it. But wow. I remember how excited I was when that movie came out when they announced it. And obviously they tied the wrestling angle into again. Well, maybe you don't know this if you're not a wrestling fan.
Yeah, it was Hulk Hogan's first starring vehicle, and they brought in a famous giant that guy, Tiny Lister, to play Zeus, his opponent. And Tiny Lister's had a decent little film career.
Oh, yeah,
Friday among other things. Mm-hmm. But
he was in The Dark Knight. That's had a really big.
Oh, that's
role.
Right. Yeah. He was in that.
Yeah,
so
he was the prisoner on the boat.
That has the great monologue, the great challenge. There.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's had that now. He's a master thespian, I think, compared to Mr. Hogan at that time.
Right.
What didn't help matters was that. Vince McMahon then tried to push Zeus as an actual wrestler. And, we've talked for many years about peeking behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. That's shoving somebody through a curtain.
Oh,
and no, we don't want this.
Yeah. And I mentioned to you at the screening that there is a wrestling podcast it's oddly a mortgage guy from Alabama and a guy named Bruce Pritchard who was for years a behind the scenes guy in the World Wrestling Federation,
and then was Brother Love,
and was Brother Love. if you watched in the '80s, they go into great detail in their podcast about the whole. It was the event was SummerSlam 1989, and the whole story behind bringing him in, how he got him in, and their difficulties with him. He was very limited, as far as what he could do physically.
This is Tiny Lister, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And by the way, Hulk Hogan's moves were also limited. Great body.
Yeah.
Not a lot of – not the sharpest technician.
Right, yeah. So you know, whether, I guess if you're a wrestling fan especially, it's fascinating as can be to listen to that.
Yeah.
But, and it's hilarious, it's hysterically funny, I guess if you're a fan of Tiny Lister as well, to hear the stories and how he reacted and how unprepared he was. Not no fault of his own, you know, obviously
right.
He was asked to do this and brought in, but that's something that's definitely, it's called Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard is what the podcast is called. And it's a massive, massive hit, I guess, on the internet. Like, it was
cool.
One of the best podcasts and all this. Second to Film Sociology. But
I heard you, thanks. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're not losing sleep over this show.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so it's hysterically funny. But, yeah, that did not go well. The kids got just a couple minutes in and abandoned it.
So have you shown the kids, like, old wrestling footage on YouTube from the 70s and 80s? How about when before the cartoon really kicked in, like regional stuff?
Yeah, we have the WWE Network.
Oh, of course you do.
Which has, yes, and it is a treasure trove of old wrestling stuff.
I'm amazed you get stuff done.
Right, yeah, and sometimes I don't. But it has... so much.
Now, this recorder is checking the program schedule. I don't know, but is there a time on certain nights they do this organization or this territory or what?
They have there's almost a live feed, I guess you could call it.
You want to be director of programming for this job, right?
Yeah. There is some sort of live feed where you can just hit watch now and it's whatever program happens to be on.
My gosh.
Yeah, but it's like the on-demand part of it.
Oh,
is
okay.
That's kind of the meat and potatoes of
so
it.
So if I want to binge watch the Road Warriors from 1985.
Yeah, they've redone their engine. It's more like a Netflix thing, and
okay.
It's generally organized by year and event. But now they're getting into, now you can just go through and find WrestleMania for whatever year, you know, and just like a list of them. And now there's, you know, here's something from this particular rivalry or here's something from this particular wrestler. So, yeah, you should be able to start doing
that. Oh,
good
Lord, I'm
soon.
Never getting that. My wife will kill me.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And sometimes I can, oh, hey, look who this is. Look, here's Steve Austin from when he had hair.
Stunning, you know? Steve
yeah.
Austin. Yes. And by the way, if you don't know, when Joe shows up, it occasionally turns into a wrestling podcast. You're
yes.
Film sociology.
Yeah. Speaking of actors,
yes.
Wrestling actors, and Steve Austin.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So we met, going back to this. So that being said, Santa with muscles and.
Oh.
And was it Mr. Nanny or
uh-huh.
something? Oh,
Suburban Commando.
Suburban Commando. Oh,
yeah.
That's.
He did one of the Three Ninjas movies. He was the villain.
Yeah, he
that.
Did.
Yeah.
So.
And we want to not forget Thunder in Paradise also.
With Chris Lemon.
Baywatch meets Knight Rider. So.
Good God. Good God. Which means, of course, his best work is still Rocky III, is Thunder Lips.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the height right there.
So.
Or Gremlins, too. I might go Gremlins.
Oh, jeez, I can't do Gremlins. So that's fine. All right. So with that in mind, we were thinking about action tough guys, cinema mm-hmm. tough guys, or tough ladies mm-hmm. that did not do films with kids and maybe should.
Mm-hmm.
My pick, Charles Bronson. I think Charles Bronson should have done one.
Yeah.
Look how patient he was with the kids in The Magnificent Seven. you know, I'm stunned Cannon didn't do this, but I guess my other choice for a living artist, Steven Seagal.
Yeah, Steven Seagal would
no
be...
No patience.
Yeah, I would love to see an R-rated Steven Seagal film where he has to bring a kid in. And it just make it PG-13. Where they have to like cut away to the bone snapping and just see the look of horror on the kid's face as all this goes down.
Do you have any suggestions? What cinema tough people?
What did Stallone do for kids?
Over the top.
Yeah.
Well,
it's not the wacky comic.
No, it is
not.
I think he dodged that bullet. Maybe
yeah.
Actually, hold on. You bring that up.
I saw a list where they put "Stop or My Mom Will Shoot." I don't know if that quite.
No, that's
qualifies.
No, that's
yeah.
That's just bad. Bad.
Yeah. It it's dumb.
Thank you. Very good. Very good indeed.
Let's see. So Stallone didn't do any. Van Damme didn't do anything.
Yeah, he didn't do one.
I mean, the Rock has done them ad nauseum, of course.
I know. He was the voice of Joe the Lion in Zookeeper.
Yes, he was.
Oh, Spy Kids. But that's
oh,
not.
Okay.
But it's not what we're looking for.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
He's actually not
kind of, yeah.
bad in Spy Kids 3. He got yeah. to uh-huh. branch.
Yeah.
He had to play different personas and characters. So,
yeah.
Yeah, anime. He's done animated stuff. That doesn't count. No, he has not really done that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
lucky him.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's you know, kids all know him anyway from Rocky and, you know, everything
other
else.
Other stuff.
Yeah.
So, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
I like that.
What about somebody like Fred Williamson?
Oh, God. You mean film sociology guest Fred Williamson? I think that would work. Cynthia Rothrock? She'd be a nanny that kicks butt.
I wouldn't be surprised to see sooner or later. This is almost counter-reverse, almost programming, Ronda Rousey, who has become a professional.
Ah, right. Yeah, are we still waiting on that Roadhouse remake with Ronda? Is that...
I am.
I'm sure you are. Actually, Ronda Rousey wouldn't be bad. That's not bad at all. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So, and I remember a long time ago, I can't remember, might have been Esquire, or might have been one of the Guy magazines. I'm sorry. But they talked about the female Expendables. And so, you know, the dream casting of Angelina Jolie, Pam Grier, Cynthia Rothrock, Ronda Rousey's got to be in it, Michelle Yeoh, and the other female from Crouching Tiger, whose name I can never pronounce. Sorry. Yeah, all of that. So anyway, there is that. So now we go from that. We've mentioned a few actors, a few wrestlers that have moved into the movie business. Mm-hmm. Which old wrestlers should have had their own movie career? Yeah. And I have the top choice, but I'd like to hear your guess.
Yeah, you know, and you kind of gave me just a few minutes to come up with this.
I know.
And actually the answer just popped into my head for me would have been in his prime, Jake the Snake Roberts. He would have been a great
he's a heel
villain. Yeah,
oh, he would have been a heel in everything. Yeah, he would have been if the Expendables 6, if they went that far.
Yeah, yeah.
I have it should have happened in probably 1980. Mm-hmm. Could have done this throughout the 80s. Everybody's favorite rotund cinema detective, Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Dusty going to get down the business. Yeah.
And I think he was also in, I think he was in, I Heard Like
to I Hurt Like
People.
To Hurt People. Yeah. Yes, he was. But no.
But no, nothing like being mainstream. Well,
Fred Williamson and Dusty Rhodes as cops on the streets of Gary, Indiana.
I would have watched that so much. I would have watched that every day.
So that superstar Billy Graham, I think, because he could sell, and this is another one that he could be in a kid film and nobody would understand what the hell he's saying. The Ultimate Warrior,
yes, right.
And the kid's just looking at him, puzzled, like, "What are you talking about?"
Yes, he the most incoherent big name ever. Yeah. And you know, we haven't even mentioned it. I almost want to say it's a crime that we didn't mention Roddy Piper, you know, in his career.
Yeah, you know, but I don't think he did. Yeah, he didn't do the kid stuff either.
No, I don't think so.
And he hit a high peak with They Live, which I think at the time of this recording, I think I saw something on Twitter that this was the anniversary of the opening weekend, and it was like the top moneymaker that weekend. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Roddy. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. But he carved out a decent little career for himself from John Carpenter to straight to whatever. So
that's
Hulk not
bad. To Frog Town, and he did a
oh,
bunch
geez.
Of just stuff.
That's
just a
right.
bunch of stuff like that. There's actually this weird ultra low budget kind of wrestling community filmmaking deal where wrestlers just kind of like congregate into this odd either action film or horror film or something.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of them. I don't even know what any of them are called, but they're super low budget kind of things. And it's kind of I've seen just little clips here and there, and it's something.
Is it slightly better than Backyard Wrestling?
it's kind of the film equivalent of that, right?
Oh, you know, my God.
It's pretty bad. But Kurt Angle has kind of tried his hand a little bit to very, very limited success.
No movies with Bob Backlund in 1978.
Oh my God.
78. Now today, Backlund, when he made the return,
Crazy Bob Backlund.
Crazy Bob
today would be an amazing Bond villain.
I think Bob Backlund. I just showed this to somebody. If you've seen New York Jets football coach Adam Gase with those googly eyes, there's a duo right there. Yeah, great Bond villain. Uh-huh. All right, so. This is great programming ideas that will never see the light of day. It's film sociology.
I don't know why they don't just come and listen to us and start making movies based on what we say.
Right? And by the way, hi, Gail.
Thank you. Yeah. And by the way, we did have that discussion at the screening, and my daughter was offended that I didn't realize she knew exactly who Gail Kim was. You know, because I was explaining to her that, you know, you had spoken to her and how jealous I was. And I tried to then explain who Gail Kim was. She was maybe, I thought it was a little before her time. And
I know
she
who
got,
Gail Kim is.
Yeah, I know who she is, Dad.
And who the Beatles are.
Yeah, and she has been watching some YouTube videos herself of older women's matches. So
me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. My family's very patient. All right. All right. With all that nonsense, and thank you for listening.
You're
still listening. Now, come on. Well, okay. So it's up against Playing with Fire is up against Midway. And you can go to you guys reviewed it, right?
We did, yeah.
Okay, so
reviews
you go to the film app. When you get to the little of this, little of that, you can read the review of Midway.
Yeah.
Last Christmas, if you want to see, I think apparently, if you want to see a Lifetime movie with a better cast, and it written by Emma Thompson, so you have Emilia Clarke and her eyebrows, and that's happening. And then Playing with Fire. So that's really, but there is something opening at the Keystone Arts that this weekend as well. And as I was watching it, I was this is the weekly Kermundan with old crabby critics like yours truly. I had said before about Joker, the whole if you like it, it's an homage, if you don't like it, it's a ripoff.
Yeah.
And for me, Joker borrowed too much from Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy, stuff like that. That being said, I go in with the film Cyrano, My Love, which is basically Shakespeare in Love, but replace Romeo and Juliet and add in Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah.
There was a film a couple years ago with Christopher Plummer. I think it was The Man Who Invented Christmas, which was basically Charles Dickens in Love. So that's what this is. That you could have name of author in Love.
Yeah.
And it's this poet who's written a couple of flop plays, and he's got his back against the wall financially, and he has this idea made up on the spot with one of the elder actors in Paris in the 1890s. And basically, as he's talking to him and seeing things and hearing things, he's able to develop the plot for Cyrano de Bergerac.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more you know about Cyrano, the little nuances you'll get it. But even the standard stuff, if you've seen Roxanne for you fans of the 80s.
Right.
So, the insults and the letter writing and their version of the balcony scene. All of those show up. And it's actually a nice little picture. Once you get into the final performance, which is about an hour 20 into it, and then there's about a half hour devoted to the opening night performance. There's the usual problems, people backing out, people getting in trouble. You have the financiers who look a lot like the Jeffrey Rush subplot of Shakespeare in Love. There's almost a love triangle, but not quite. But once the and maybe because I do stage stuff, but once we get into the opening night portion of the film, it's a real treat. So, but I can think of maybe, as I mentioned, two other films that have this concept as opposed to, a future famous villain in a downward spiral kind of thing.
Right.
So anyway, it's out there if you want to check out something different that's happening over there. A couple of titles on video, which we'll get to here on Film Sociology. Oh, so I guess the big title this week. Did you see Hobbs and Shaw?
I saw Hobbs and Shaw, I think, 4 times.
Why, kids?
Well, I went and saw it at the advanced screening, and then our friend Nick Rogers, for his birthday, brought people to. Actually, I saw it 3 times.
Okay.
In the theaters. That was a his birthday celebration was taking a group to see Hobbs and Shaw that he had not seen it. So I actually traveled to Lafayette and paid to see it.
Wow.
With him. Which was a fantastic experience.
I bet.
Yeah, with a lot of his friends and loved ones. And then my son, Riley, my oldest son, wanted to see it also. So I was like, you know what? Let's go see it right
It's
now.
Funny. I remember The Fate of the Furious is basically a cinematic heel turn.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And you know how it's going. This is Hobbs and Shaw. Now, I've not seen this, but it seems like it's the equivalent of I don't like you, but I'm going to tag team with you. It's like Dusty Rhodes and Ole Anderson teaming up together. And that's basically what it is to fight Idris Elba.
Yes, yes. And yeah, it's and if you look at it as insider Hollywood baseball, it's Dwayne Johnson does not want to work with Vin Diesel anymore. So I'm going to hijack your, as by the way, I predicted maybe a decade ago He is hijacking the franchise for his own benefit.
Dwayne?
Yes.
Okay.
And eating Vin Diesel's lunch once again.
yeah, that's not a good pairing.
Kissing his girlfriend right in front of him.
Oh, geez.
But it is very dumb fun. And there's a couple of really terrific cameos. The climax of the film
it's dumb.
A little bit lackluster. The climax is a little lackluster, but it's overall it's fun. There's a lot of it's goofy rivals who have to team up. Yeah, like you said.
Is there any scenery chewing for Mr. Alba, or does he play it cool?
Oh no, he actually comes in and is just like, hey, I'm the bad guy.
And I should still be the next James Bond.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And there's a lot of kind of strange mystery surrounding his character, and
of course,
yeah, of course, but. It's never really resolved, so they clearly are looking to
bring him
either connect this to the actual franchise or spin this off as its own little sub franchise where there's a secret behind the scenes. There's a big bad, right, that is pulling this the puppet master that we never even find out who he is. So
or the whistleblower,
right.
Jason Statham hasn't done a kid film yet, has he?
I thought he had, but he would be great. That'd be
yeah. He has no time for children. He yeah.
I you know what? I think he has. Continue talking.
Hi, welcome to Hot Scrolling Action here on Film Sociology. Not the first, won't be the last. Joe Shearer is looking up. Okay, of course, I'm also asking a very painful thing for him to look up the Jason Statham filmography.
Right. Uh-huh.
Also, a guy like. Okay, so while you're looking that up, that's out on video. Oh, it's funny you mentioned that. On Blu-ray now, you can get Santa with Muscles.
Oh, look at that.
If you need that. Uh-huh. If you need that. Let's see. Other titles include, oh, The Art of Racing in the Rain. If you need a dog voice with old Kevin Costner gruff voice, that's happening, as well as Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
A film that I heartily enjoyed with my kids also.
Really?
Yes, yes. It is a, if you remember the 90s, the television series Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Right.
It's almost kind of the late teens version of that.
Because it really pushed, I mean, I assume it's a PG-13
yes.
thriller. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you mentioned that series, mm-hmm. and this looks, again, I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Film Critic, it doesn't see anything. but this has a look, I mean, it looks way darker yeah. than that.
It's a bit darker, but it's still, I took all three of my kids to see it. Oddly, my daughter, again, is the horror film fan of the three of them.
Way to go.
The boys retreated to the lobby about halfway through, and she gave them the what for that, by the way. But she really enjoyed it. They actually just mentioned it the other day as wanting to watch it again. But it's intense for kids, but it's, you know, in terms of the nature of the scares, it's kind of, you know, it's aimed toward them. It's not particularly
okay.
gruesome, but it is a little intense. So
okay,
yeah. I recommend it for sure because I really enjoyed it.
All right, a couple other titles that are out is The Kitchen. That's the 70s mob film with mm-hmm. Melissa McCarthy and Elizabeth Moss, and then finally Ophelia, Hamlet from Ophelia's point of view. Daisy Ridley getting very little money to make up for the gigantic money she's doing for Star Wars, so uh-huh. she gets a break from Star Wars and actually does some Shakespeare, sort of, kind of. Yeah. All right, so but has Jason Statham done any kid films?
I do not see any Jason Statham.
So there you go. There's another one.
I really thought he did, though. I really thought there was one of those. I have this picture of him like holding a baby with the poopy diaper scene.
Oh God!
But I can't.
He would also kick the poop out of the way.
Yes,
of the roundhouse.
That's how he did it. He kicked the diaper
literally.
And, yeah, and the poop flew off and went back.
You will not get sprayed with that, sir. No. And thank you. Sorry for that imagery. All right. So those are the old titles. Yeah, that's pretty much it, I think. Resurrection's on.
We won't count Romeo and Juliet.
No, honestly. That's animated.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Work.
A few other titles of note. I was catching up on stuff thanks to Film Movement. There's a couple of decent films from Israel. One called An Israeli Love Story, and when a young lady wants to get into acting and audition for a theater troupe in Tel Aviv. And when she has an encounter with a gentleman on a bus who's she falls in love. They fall in love with each other. He also has a side job where he's helping refugees slip into the country. Granted, this is 1947. Mm-hmm. So the political tensions play a part into their coupling. Then you have Harmonia. It's a film of a modern telling of the story of Abraham, which you have a conductor of a symphony and his wife who plays harp, and they strike up a friendship with a young woman who is one of the horn players. And as time goes on, their friendship gets more complicated. Mm-hmm. And what happens when the boys get into when boys are born and they want to pursue music in different ways. Mm-hmm. Also, a documentary called Scared of Revolution, featuring the gentleman known as the Last Poets. These were gentlemen that recorded spoken word in the late 60s, early 70s. Many credit them as being the building blocks for rap music, basically saying if it wasn't for them, there'd be no Gil Scott-Heron. A lot of their work was sampled, especially from the Notorious B.I.G. I'm going to change the title on this because I have to. Ends Are Scared of Revolution is one of their more famous pieces. So we follow poet Umar growing up in going from Akron to New York to Flint.
Oh,
oof. So anyway, but a very cool look at an artist's struggles as well as their impact in the community and in the poetry world. And then there were two music documentaries I got to watch recently. And two different results. One is I'll Never Forget You, which is not even a 70-minute documentary about the last 72 hours of the band Lynyrd Skynyrd. Oh, of course, yeah. They had the plane crash in 1977. Yeah. So there's a lot of buildup once we get into it. It's like 22 minutes into the film is when we actually get to the flight itself. So you get about a 20-minute history lesson of Lynyrd Skynyrd, and then somebody who survived the crash, a couple people actually survived the crash, as well as first responders are the crux of the talking heads. That's lowercase T and H.
Yes.
And their stories about that tragic day. This is one of those films where there's no music of Lynyrd Skynyrd. Mm-hmm. That and with, you know, they tried to pull as much performance footage, video, not audio. Yeah. And so anyway, you could say unofficial, but it's not because they're there. Yeah. Now, on the flip side, there is a really cool documentary called The Life and Times of Steve Marriott. This is the gentleman who would be in Small Faces, Humble Pie. And this one has music performance coverage, interviews with the likes of Peter Frampton. They worked together at one time. And the fact that I didn't realize Steve Marriott did children's theater. He was in the touring production of Oliver for a year and a half and wound up playing the Artful Dodger. Really cool archival footage and music. So this is a part of a DVD, Blu-ray, and CD collection. There is I believe it was a Winterland concert from 1973 on compact disc. So if you're into classic rock, The Life and Times of Steve Marriott is worth checking out. I want to get to what's playing around town, and then I'm going to ask Josh here what he's watched recently, whether it's new or old, depending on when you're listening to the show, of course. Mm-hmm. Friday night, 7 o'clock at IU Cinema, the 1980 film Babylon, and then at 10 o'clock on Friday, November 8th from 1981, the original Clash of the Titans.
Oh, yes. Oh.
There you go. Yeah, and the little owl thing. And Laurence Olivier getting a big check to play Zeus. And Harry Hamlin with the feathered hair. Saturday, November 9th at 4 o'clock is a part of the City Lights film series from 1935, Captain Blood. Oh, at 7 o'clock, Saturday, November 9th, the Underground film series, Miami Connection.
Oh, yeah. So
go see this.
If I can tell you another quick story.
Please.
Regarding that movie. Back to
you make fun of me for The Room, but you actually have praise for my. You have a story involving Miami Connection?
Well, somewhat. So, you know, I referenced the FYFF. Again, I can't I can't define that term.
Film Festival.
Yes.
Yeah.
So again, our friends at Midwest Film Journal and I do this every year. Actually, a couple times a year, we switch up genres: horror films in the fall, you know, and then kind of action movies in the summer. And we were supposed to watch the Miami Connection
yes.
as our initial film. We showed up again at Nick's house in Lafayette to watch that, and he of the still using the DVD feature from Netflix.
Oh,
pulls out a DVD, pops it in, and it is not Miami Connection. It is a TV movie starring Andy McDowell and Rosie O'Donnell called "Riding the Bus with My Sister."
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
Yeah, and he we sit there and watching it, and he says, "We really need to just watch this whole movie." So we sit and watch this whole movie.
Isn't Rosie O'Donnell like mentally challenged?
She is. She's performing in such a way that Robert Downey Jr. referenced in Tropic Thunder, that you do not ever do. And it is very.
She went full.
Yes, she did.
She went full R.
Yes, and it was very.
Uncomfortable. Like more spraying diarrhea. Uncomfortable.
Yes, yes. Andy McDowell plays her sister. So basically, it's Rosie O'Donnell playing someone with, you know, special needs.
Not Rain Man.
Right. And the entire world is cruel to her in the worst way. It's a terrible, terrible movie. So suffice it to say, I've not been able to watch Miami Connection since then.
But you got to watch that.
Yes. And on top of it all, after the movie ended, Nick then revealed that he was swerving us the entire time and had always planned on that being the feature, not Miami Connection. So... we're saving that for another time.
He's John Doe in Seven.
Yes, he is. And it was a mastermind. And I was not even mad by the time it was over.
I've heard just bad things about that.
Please don't watch it. This is
Joe Cheersing.
I'm almost certain that Rosie O'Donnell herself would be trying to get this film
removed.
Yes, removed.
Like the Star Wars Christmas special.
Yes, yes. And
wow.
It is. It's not a pleasant experience for anyone. I think Andy McDowell and Rosie are the only two actors of note in the film that I'm thinking of off the top of my head. But I did not get to watch Miami Connection in favor of that.
Well, you should. It's bat spit crazy.
Yes.
You have drug dealing ninjas and a bad rock band and a guy who makes Jackie Chan look like Laurence Olivier. And it's delightfully awful. I've seen it at midnight at Keystone Arts, and that's the best place for it. So, yeah, that's definitely pizza, beer, movie night.
Yeah.
So that is happening Saturday at 7 o'clock at IU Cinema. Sunday the 10th at IU Cinema, 1 o'clock, 1954. Carmen Jones, Harry Belafonte, and then at 4 o'clock there'll be an intermission from 4 to 7. Both parts of Ivan the Terrible from 1944 and 1958. Monday, the November 11th, Afterlife at 7 o'clock. Thursday, November 14th at 7 o'clock, from 2017, Mary Shelley, film about of course the author, and I. I think that's about it for that. There were some cancellations on the 15th. So anyway, that's at IU Cinema at the historic Artcraft Cinema. Ooh, the Artcraft is the place to go, ladies and gentlemen, when you get a chance to see an old movie on a big screen. And the 8th and the 9th, it doesn't matter when you're listening to this, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Great Escape.
Oh, there you go.
So, that's worth seeing on the big screen. Coming up. Hi, Bianca. Friday, November 15th at 7:30 p.m., Love Actually. Saturday, November 16th at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m., the Cartoons for Cans. They do this. Admission is a non-perishable food item, and it helps out the Interchurch Food Pantry. So I believe it's all old Warner Brother cartoons on the big screen. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday, November 16th at 7:30 p.m., The First Lethal Weapon.
Oh, yes.
Gotta see it.
Yes.
And I have a story with that because it's going to coincide with I got done doing Henry IV, Part 1. And what is a ritual for me is if there is a film version of a play I just did, I will sit down and watch. Well, like last year we did Dracula, and I was like, oh, I have to binge. I have to binge watch Dracula, which isn't bad. But there were three films, and actually it turned out to be six. But based on or inspired by Henry the Fourth, Part One, The Hollow Crown, which was from about 6 years ago. So you had Richard the Second with Ben Whishaw. Pre-Paddington, PP. And then you have both parts of Henry the Fourth, Part One. King Henry the Fourth is played by Jeremy Irons. Prince Hal is Tom Hiddleston. And then, of course, Prince Hal will eventually become Henry the Fifth, and that's also Hiddleston. So watch that. The 1966 Orson Welles film Chimes at Midnight, which is basically Falstaff's greatest hits. Orson Welles took both parts of Henry IV and kind of made it into a Falstaff story. Mm-hmm. And then Gus Van Sant's My Own Private Idaho, the one with Keanu Reeves and River Phoenix. I had forgotten because it's about a two lovers. One is a street hustler, a male hustler. The other is the son of the mayor of Seattle. That's the Keanu Reeves character. And there are characters, well, his name is Bob, but there are lines of dialogue and plot points lifted from Henry the Fourth, Part One. So it was fun to watch that again. I've seen My Own Private Idaho five or six times, and it's been a long time since I watched it. So the fact that I have my own connection with the play and this specific character to watch it again with fresh eyes was really, really cool.
Can we officially call Keanu Reeves a Shakespearean actor then?
He did Hamlet.
Yeah, and he did Midsummer Night's
Dream. I would love to see him. Yeah. He did what?
He did A Midsummer Night's Dream. Yeah.
Are you sure you're nothing in Dangerously Liaisons?
No, it was straight Midsummer Night's Dream.
Not a film, but like there's on stage.
It was a film. Yeah, it was a film version.
Oh, you got to look this up because I would like to see this. No, I think the fact that we're still doing the Keanu Reeves can't act bit in 2019, he's finding stuff that he can do well, like John Wick or make fun of himself in Toy Story 4. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we know about the leather pants and Much Ado, and that's really uncomfortable and it was bad. Mm-hmm. But first off, you don't turn down that gig. You get right. to do Shakespeare with Kenneth Branagh and friends in the south of Italy. So, no, you don't turn that down. So after going through all that, you know, highfalutin stuff, I needed to cleanse my palate, and I did three films, all similar documentaries, all about specific genres of cinema. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Electric Boogaloo, The Story of Canon Films?
Yes, I have.
Oh, yes. My. So I had friends over. That's become one of my go-to films of if I have company over, if we're going to have drinks and say, have you seen this? No, you've not seen, especially if they're in my age range. You're like, you've not seen this? And then, of course, if usually it's a guy. Uh-huh. Like, you grew up watching Canon stuff, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So we did. Mm-hmm. And Canon Films is the story of the Canon Film Company, Golem Globus, and the fact that they made a lot of movies quick and inexpensive. And they were able to do this into the 80s. They did... And then it became the Chuck and Chuck film company because they had both Norris and Bronson involved. Mm-hmm. And they still kept low budgets. And then there were three films that financially did them in. Yeah. Superman 4, yep. Hi Abdul, Masters of the Universe,
yes.
And Over the Top. And Over the Top is the one, if you scream about actors getting paid ridiculous amounts of money, mm-hmm. you could probably start with Sly in Over the Top.
Yes.
And so the story that I alluded to earlier, back in the 80s, when we were younger, they would do advanced screenings. And now at that time, it would be paired up with another film from that studio. So on a Friday or Saturday night, Warner Brothers is going to push a new film that's going to be opening up in a couple of months. And they want you to build word of mouth, and then you go into it. Mm-hmm. The word of mouth film was Lethal Weapon.
Wow.
The film it went with was Over the Top. We went from being blown away. We're like, oh, my God, Mel Gibson and Dan. Oh, God, the guy from Witness, you know, and the Color Purple. Oh, my gosh. And then we went into Meet Me Halfway, arm wrestling. He beats up Terry. He throws Terry Funk through a window. It's so bad.
Speaking of wrestlers who are in the movies, Terry Funk.
Yeah. Terry Funk should have done more Westerns.
Yes, he should
if
have.
If the Western genre hadn't been dead except for Clint Eastwood in the 80s and early 90s.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
So did we find Keanu Reeves info?
Actually, I was mistaken. He didn't do A Midsummer Night's Dream. He did Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes, that's what I...
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Fair enough. I would like to see... Wow. Mm-hmm. He'd have to be one of the lovers back then.
Yeah.
He would be Oberon now.
Yeah.
So anyway,
also,
yeah.
Also Speed, more Shakespeare.
Okay. So I watched Electric Boogaloo again, which is just fun.
It's so much fun.
Then there was Machete Maidens, which is about the exploitation films that were made in the Philippines. And this was from the gentleman that gave us Not Quite Hollywood, about the Australian exploitation films, the Ozplation films. And then Mike Malloy, who has been on this show before, I revisited his documentary Eurocrime, about the cop and mob films that were made in Italy in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. So going through that, and then Halloween Night, I had never seen, and I bought it because thank you, Criterion, for doing your flash half-off sales, the Japanese film House.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen this?
I did. We watched that maybe 2 years ago
at the fest.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I've heard about it. In fact, though, Keystone Arts, I think, showed it last year, and I wasn't able to go. So, Joe, you want to describe that? You're my guest.
No, I don't.
you have a – and it takes about okay, on paper, you have a group of schoolgirls, not that young.
Right.
Not old enough, but not that young, who are supposed to spend time at a cabin, and plans are changed, and they wind up going to – one of the schoolgirls has an auntie that she hasn't seen in forever, and they go to the house that's – it's more than haunted. Yeah. It's just demented, and it takes a good – 20 minutes. That's the other thing, folks. You have to be patient with this. I remember it reminded me of when I was in college and I showed some college peers The Exorcist, and they were bored out of their minds early on. Because really, if you remember nothing really kicks in until the first 45 minutes in.
Yes,
and we had been raised by slasher movies in which you have a blood count, you have a body count within the first 5 minutes, no later than 10.
Yes.
So that's this. You have to be patient. I would say stylized is an understatement. There is just a lot of heightened visuals and acting and camera work.
It's sort of an LSD trip in
kind
some ways.
Of trippy. Yeah.
Yeah.
If Head meets a haunted house movie.
Yes.
There's about 25 minutes. You got to be patient with this film.
Yeah.
Once they get into said title of the film, it's bonkers.
Yes.
It's not gross. It's sort of uncomfortable, but it's totally bonkers.
Yes.
So if you're in for unusual visual feast and scary stuff that's not taken too seriously, the Japan, not the 80s film with William Katz.
No,
somebody already made that crack.
Yeah,
hi, Erica. But no, the Japanese film House is up your alley.
Yeah. It's it is most definitely the thing you watch when you really want something different. You're not going to watch this and go, that was so scary. It's just, like you said, nutty. It's just nutty as can be, right?
Yeah.
But
how did you guys respond? Same thing? Everybody was that universal?
Yeah, it was. They all enjoyed it a lot, and I was kind of like, what did I just see, you know? But they were getting me back for showing them Beyond the Darkness, I think, that year.
As well they should.
Yes.
So what have you been watching lately?
Yeah.
Have you been able, or have you dug into the award screener season yet?
I have not really dug in. I'm far behind this year.
Okay.
Life has... Has certainly pulled me away, but
stupid life.
Yeah, but I've watched a couple. I watched Greener Grass. Have you seen that?
No.
So it's this suburban dystopia kind of film. It's got what is his name from Saturday Night Live? Colin Jost from Saturday Night Live is in it.
Really?
And it's a bizarre movie. Revolves around soccer moms, and there's this whole just. It is bizarre. It's very trippy. It starts at a soccer game where there are two soccer moms who have braces, literal soccer moms as their kids are playing soccer.
Right.
One of them is holding a baby, and they talk for about 3 or 4 minutes. And then one of them looks at the one with the baby and says, "Oh, I didn't realize you had a baby." And the other mom goes, "Oh, yes." And they go, you know, there's a line of, "Oh, well, here, but you can have it." And so they literally hand the baby over. It's a
Stepford Wives-y.
It's a straight, like, obviously a satire of suburban life.
Right.
There's scenes where husbands and wives kiss each other only to reveal, "Oh no, I'm kissing the wrong wife." And then they all switch around. There's a whole lot of that kind of stuff. And it kind of just devolves into this crazy, just kind of a
suburban
manic,
anarchy.
It's suburban anarchy. And it's definitely kind of worth watching as a kind of a – it's a farce, obviously. It's very farcical. But that was something I saw recently. It got a very limited release, and I asked them for a screener and got one.
Well, look at you.
Yeah, so that was one of my favorites that I've seen recently. Let's see. I caught up with stuff like Dolomite Is My Name.
I was about to say, I just pulled that up as well.
Yeah.
Dolomite Is My Name is Eddie Murphy playing Rudy Ray Moore, a comic, a singer, and trying to find his stamp on things. Mm-hmm. And he creates this poetic pimp blaxploitation hero called Dolomite.
Yeah.
It's directed by Craig Brewer, who gave us Black Snake Moan and Hustle and Flow.
Amazing movies.
And the remake of Footloose. Loose.
Yeah, not an amazing movie.
But it's also written by Scott Alexander and Larry Krasuski, and these are the guys that gave us Ed Wood.
Yeah.
And it feels like a lot. It feels very similar to Ed Wood.
In fact, it's
a great that would be a great double feature. Mm-hmm. This is another one where it's Ed Wood, except take out Plan 9 from Outer Space and put in Dolomite, and it's kind of what it is. It's an underdog story. Mm-hmm. It's this guy who is in his 40s and he's wearing wigs and he's supposed to be in the movies, he's supposed to be a kung fu sex machine and with his blue poetry and nobody's backing him on this except for this wonderful band of brothers that includes Keegan-Michael Key, Titus Burgess, Divine Joy Radolph is in it, Snoop Dogg's in it, T.I. It's and Murphy's really good. This is probably his best work since Dreamgirls.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes also.
Wesley Snipes is Dourville Mountain. Yeah. Hey, I think Wesley Snipes did this because he wanted to do it, not because he had to, clean off his debt.
Right.
I'm a fan of the films of Rudy Ray Moore. I own them, of course. Uh-huh. Not on Blu-ray, because that's crazy.
I do own Dolomite on Blu-ray.
Do you really?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I sure do.
A lot of features?
I don't.
You know what it is?
I don't care. We just watched
it. It's rated Aura. But the other funny thing is it's similar to Ed Wood. If you watch, they got the movies moments down to a T. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a fight in a car trunk and bad kung fu, and if you watch it side by side, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's pretty terrific. I wasn't sure what to expect from it. It was just kind of a good time. A nice little, I don't know if you would call it a piece of history.
It is in a way.
It's
an odd footnote. I mean, and we could talk about, and it's a way of independent distribution. He wanted to basically go from city to city with his movie under his arm and start selling it. And yes, Indianapolis is a plot point in this.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So, if you're into that, Chris Rock has a cameo as an Indianapolis DJ. It's not me.
Yeah, right.
But it's a very satisfying underground or underdog film with, and again, if this film will make more people check out Dolomite and the other films of Rudy Ray Moore, go
Please
at it.
Do it. Yeah.
Please do
it. Go check them out. I do want to mention two other movies that
we
went back to the horror version of the FYFF, and I sorry to keep going back to that.
Yeah, it's all right.
So I want
because I've never name dropped or told stories
exactly
multiple
right.
times here.
Exactly right.
All right.
There are two films I want to highlight. Number one, the one that I brought to the festival this year.
When did it happen?
It was mid October.
Okay, all right.
So it was just a couple weeks back. I showed them, and I made a kind of an executive decision to switch the movie Literally, maybe an hour before it was time to show my movie.
Good Lord.
And I switched up to 1981's Bloody Birthday. Have you seen that movie?
Wait, is that the that's not the one with Jason Alexander?
No, no. So this one is
and it's not Happy Birthday to Me.
It is not Happy Birthday to
Lee
Me.
Jay Lee Thompson.
Yeah, no. Yep. Bloody Birthday is about three children born during an eclipse.
I think I've seen this trailer.
Yeah,
yes,
and they are murderous killers. And there
it's two boys and a girl?
Yes, two boys and a girl. One of the boys...
I don't know why you picked this.
Right, yeah. One of the boys, I'm going to have to... I can't remember the guy's name.
That's
now.
Okay, but he's a that guy?
He's a that guy. He was in... he played in Just One of the Guys.
Oh, jeez.
And he was like the brother character, I think,
okay,
in that movie. And he was in Parker Lewis Can't Lose, the series from the 80s, the Fox series.
He was Parker Lewis?
No, he was like Parker's best friend.
Oh, okay. All right, all right. That kid.
Yeah, something Jane, not Thomas Jane. Certainly not.
No, it's not Thomas Jane.
Billy Jane. Billy Jane.
Not
or
Billy
something.
Jack, right.
Billy Jane, something okay. like that. So there's a young Julie Brown, not downtown Julie Brown, the
Miss
other
Julie
one.
Brown.
Yes, and she has an extended topless scene.
I've seen this. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I've seen. I was a fan of Just Say Julie, so I've seen this.
Essentially, these three kids are serial killers, and they just get away with blatantly murdering people. And until, of course, there's one young lady who sees through them and of course, becomes their target. So, imagine Michael Myers. If the child Michael Myers had two little bratty buddies and they ran around, being smarmy and just kind of offing people, that's kind of what you get with this movie.
Billy Jane. I actually have Billy Jane. My goodness, he's still working, but
yeah,
he goes all the way back. God, he did an after school special. Backroads, yeah. Bloody Birthday.
I remember him from commercials in the 90s also, like the mid to late 90s.
Okay. Beastmaster, Superstition,
yes.
Yeah. Cujo.
I believe he played the young Dar in Beastmaster.
Yes, he did. Uh-huh. Very good. Yeah. I saw the Beastmaster in a theater. It was dad dropping myself and two or three other of my friends off.
Uh-huh.
Party Camp, Demon Warp. The Burbs. He did the voiceover for the Burbs. Mm-hmm. Gosh, Frontline Roadkill. Yeah, so good way to keep working, sir.
Yeah, really. And then the other one is a Canadian film called Pin, and Terry O'Quinn is in it. Have you heard of this movie?
No, go on.
So it is bizarre. It is bonkers. So
more bonkers than House?
It may be close. So there's kind of elements of Psycho to it. So it's about so Terry O'Quinn plays a doctor, and he is he plays a
for
physician.
Those the stepdad
the stepfather
also, the original stepfather
also from Lost Locke, John
okay.
Locke from Lost, and he is a doctor, and he has this one of those mannequins that are.
Great.
Have transparent skin so you can like, see their muscles and that
great.
Kind of stuff.
Great. Does it come to life?
Well, so he as. For his children, he has difficulty relating to his children. So whenever he has to have an uncomfortable conversation with them, he goes through this mannequin. And his son fixates on it and believes that it's alive. And so
it's alive.
Not it's alive. That's something different. But he believes that it is an actual being that he can communicate with. And it turns into a there's some horror movie elements to it, obviously. But he begins to kill people through it and he is determined to protect. Pin is its name, P-I-N as in, a straight pin. And right? As opposed to an ink pen. It's not an ink pen. That's, that'd be silly.
That's pen, by the way. But anyway.
Yeah. So it is, I really recommend it. It's got it's got some parallels to Psycho. There are some somewhat creepy overtones between the character and his sister.
I'm reading the plot here. By the way, I highly recommend this website for you and anybody else. It, Pin, A Plastic Nightmare.
Yes.
From the website canucksploitation.com.
Yes.
Your complete guide to Canadian B-film. Mm-hmm. So I learned about this from interviewing Stuart McLean from the Vinyl Cafe. But I just saw I'm just going to read this verbatim online. He is interrupted by a nurse and hides behind a curtain. He is surprised when he sees the nurse lock the door and, quote, have sex with Pin.
Yes.
This moment happens, huh?
It happens early on. Yes, and it is kind of an inciting incident for him and his the issues he ends up having. Yes.
Yes, regardless of the similarities of Psycho, Pin is still quite good.
Yes, it is. It is. It is a good movie.
Filmed mostly in Quebec. All right. So have you checked out this website?
No, I have not.
Well, Canucksploitation.com.
I know what my afternoon looks like.
There you go. You're welcome. So, yeah, and there's pictures, too. There's oh, good Lord. So, okay. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, we're just hitting you furiously with titles to check That's out right. of all highfalutin nature.
Yeah.
We should wrap things up with. I've not played this in a while, except it's in the intro. So, and again, I always want to thank you. You've always brought great content and sound bites, as well as Chris Lloyd, who gave us this.
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
There's a pretty big one this
we
week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
We never do. And as Joe said, I didn't get a chance to do this last week because I recorded it before news broke of the death of famed film producer Robert Evans.
Yeah.
Which was another film. I watched the documentary The Kid Stays in the Picture, which is his memoir that they made into a film. Started out with an acting career and decided he didn't want to be the next James Dean or the next Tony Curtis. He wanted to be the next Daryl Zanuck and wound up running Paramount Studios in the 1970s and doing everything from, this is the era of Barefoot in the Park, The Odd Couple, Rosemary's Baby. They talk about that at great length. The Italian Job, True Grit, Love Story, was married to Ally McGraw. Until The Getaway, the Godfather films, so all of that, and then the infamous Cotton Club case. That it's a good film. It's just marred with really unpleasantness that happened off screen. And I believe it was Chris who wondered how Robert Evans survived the Me Too movement, probably because he was really old and out of the shadows of things, yeah. But. That dude was married 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times.
Wow.
Ally McGraw, Phyllis George, Catherine Oxenberg. Oh, my gosh.
What?
So, yeah. So, anyway, but quite a storyteller, I will say, regardless of what you think of him as a human being. And eventually, it was kind of like Shatner, where he became his own brand. There was Kid Gorgeous, which was an animated series about Evans's life. Bill Hader played a character like him in Documentary Now. Have you seen Documentary Now?
I have not. No.
You might want to look into that. It makes fun of not just specific documentaries, but styles of documentaries and certain filmmakers. So, Kid Notorious. I'm sorry. That was the animated thing. So that is out there. And yeah, let's see. The producing stuff, 21 credits, and I'll go through most of them. The Godfather. Chinatown, Godfather 2, Marathon Man, Black Sunday, Players, Nobody's Perfect, Urban Cowboy, Popeye, ooh boy, that's The Cotton Club, The Two Jakes, Sliver, thing made over $100 million.
Yeah,
uh-huh. Jade is god-awful.
Yeah.
The Phantom, Zane in Purple.
Yes.
The Saint, which also made over $100 million.
Yeah.
The Out-of-Towners, and his last one, not including Kid Notorious and the other stuff, but How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Oh.
So there you go.
That's success right there.
That's
you know?
pretty memorable. Mm-hmm. So that's Robert Evans. And then actor and comic John Witherspoon,
yes.
Who going back to doing TV in the 70s, Abdul Kim Shabazz and I got to interview him a while back. Back when Abdul was at XNT. Mm-hmm. It would be common practice for us that if Smiley Morning Show had a comic or a big name person, we'd always kind of, hey, can we get 5 minutes with him? And we were able to get John Witherspoon, who told us stories about one of his earliest films. He's the MC for the blackface scene in the Neil Diamond version of the jazz singer. And they're like, oh, we're really, it was kind of the story of, oh, we're really doing this.
Yeah.
Other credits include Rat Boy. He's best known, of course, for Friday and was, of course, the voice of Grandpa in the Boondocks, was on the Tracy Morgan Show, was Pops Williams and the Wayans Brothers, was in the First Family. Lots of, again, lots of vocal work. This is what I remember. This was my first impression with him. And then I wound up seeing him do stand up on HBO and just became a that guy.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is my tribute to John Witherspoon.
Bobby, you don't want your job, do you?
I want my job, Mr. Jones.
Bobby,
I really do.
Bobby, you don't act like it, Bobby. Look, each week a new emergency. You've had every disease known to man, and I haven't seen one damn doctor's note.
I just lose them sometimes.
Bobby, this ain't the poop butt lead, man. Ain't no poop butts around here. This is not your average hot dog stand. You know what this is? This is Winky Dinky Dog.
I know, and I'm glad to be working here at Winky Dinky Dog.
Yeah, it sends chills down my spine every time I say it. Winky Dinky Dog. Bobby, say it with me. Come on.
Winky Dinky Dog. Winky Dinky Dog.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Mr. Jones, it's not that I'm not happy working here. It's just that acting allows me to be creative.
Bobby, you can create here. I created the Winky Dinky Dog. 100% beef. Winky Dinky Hamburger. Winky Dinky Donut. Winky Dinky Dip. And I got a new one, Bobby. The Winky Dinky Whole Cake.
Whole cake.
Whole cake. Hoes got to eat too, right?
Right, you're right.
That's right. Hoes got to eat. I hate to lose you, Bobby. Big thing coming up. I'm going to talk to him, man. Winky Dinky Whole Cake.
There you go. From 1987's Hollywood Shuffle, directed by Robert Townsend. That's...
Can the IFJA house band be Hoe Cake?
as Mr. Jones, and I should also mention he had the one scene wonder as David Alan Greer's father in Boomerang, the famous accessory moment with the mushroom shirt and the mushroom jacket, and the Reverend and I'm Gonna Get You Sucka, Mr. Strickland and House Party, Wild Rudy and the Five Heartbeats. So, but yeah, full career. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
Fun stuff. All right. With that in mind, so what's happening over at the Film Yap?
As always, a little of this, a little of that.
I know Chris wrote about the original Alfie from 1966 with Michael Caine, so you can read that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, of course, check out all the latest, you know, reviews and releases. And we have an eclectic group of critics, young and old. So, relatively speaking, you know.
Yes. So, you're stuck in the middle.
Yes, I'm stuck in the upper end, upper middle part.
Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go check out the Film Yap because you should. Thanks for hanging out, Joe.
Winky dinky dogs.
That's right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live!